Sean Patrick Maloney, you're a congressman, of course, from New York's 18th District, and you've been very busy, and you work very hard, I know that. Let me talk to you a little bit about the idea that Social Security is once again under threat. How's that happening?
Well, if what you mean is that we need to make sure that it's funded for the long term, there's ways we can do that. What we should not do is go after Social Security when 90% of our seniors depend on it for their income, and only about half that number, about 45%, have any other kind of income. So this is a critical, critical safety net program for our seniors and families in the Hudson Valley, and we shouldn't be taking an axe to Social Security, particularly because people paid into it their whole lives, when we can be making better choices.
There were people on the Republican side, I think your predecessor, in fact, who really did give a fright to people about their Social Security. What in the world could the Republicans who were taking that attitude have been thinking?
Look, there are people who want to make important reforms, and then there are people who want to just, you know, take an axe to the thing. And there's people, by the way, who have a profit motive, who want to get a hold of people's retirement savings and privatize Social Security so they can bring it into a more of a fee-based model, and there's an industry out there that would like to be doing this. So you have a bunch of different agendas at work here. I think the important thing to remember is that Social Security works really well. It's a really efficient program. It is unbelievably important to the 90% of seniors in my district who depend on it for their income. And we must not be irresponsible about the way we approach it, and we should not be going there first to solve our long-term, debt and deficit problems. There are simple reforms we can make that will extend the life of Social Security for years and years to come.
Like what, Sean?
Like increasing the amount of income that is subject to the Social Security tax, particularly on wealthy folks. We now cap that at about $100,000. I don't want to start it. I don't want to start taxing that. But because that, you're still talking about moms and dads who are working and struggling, but on much higher income earners, I think there's some reforms there we can make to increase revenue into the system that would be fair, and that would help middle class families who depend on Social Security.
Sometimes I wonder when somebody starts this stuff again on Social Security, whether they really care about what happens or whether they're just looking for an issue.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I do think it tends to come from people who have enough money that they don't depend on it. And while I hate to sound that way sometimes about, you know, I'm not one of these guys that says, you know, rich people are bad, or that, you know, we should go after all rich people. But we must continue to reward wealth creation in this country, and we do that through the private system. But you will hear people get very cavalier about Social Security when they're not living and dying by it in their own retirement. And if you look at the statistics, there are thousands and thousands of people who I represent who really do depend on Social Security. I mean, it is life or death for them. And so they get scared pretty easy when you start getting cavalier about cutting it or you know, not getting a cost of living increase or the other kinds of things that some people tend to think are not that big a deal. I think they're a big deal. That's why I've been fighting to protect and defend Social Security.
Listen, Sean Patrick Maloney, I want to ask you a question. Do you like your job?
I love my job.
Right. I'm asking you that because I saw Chris Gibson, my very good friend, a Republican from the Hudson Valley, announced that he was for term limits, and he actually cut his promised term limits short in order to leave. You don't have anything like that in mind, do you?
Did he cut it short, or did he say he was going to do three terms, and three terms?
But he said four, actually.
Did he?
Yeah.
Listen, I think there's a lot of things about Chris Gibson, that I like. We have worked well together on things like Lyme disease and helping our veterans, and a lot of other issues for the Hudson Valley on farm issues, on helping our beginning farmers. You know, there's a lot of bipartisan work that we can do together and are doing together. And I got to say, like, getting in and serving a few years and getting the heck out, I think, is a pretty smart thing to do. I like the Chris Gibson model.
Is there anything about your job you don't like?
There's lots of things about the job I don't like the fundraising and all the political name-calling and all the games. But I'm not going to whine about it. I mean, I think you know that going in, and what you do is you dance between the raindrops. You know, there are realities to how you win and hold seats, particularly competitive seats like mine. You know, people may not realize my seat is one of the probably most competitive seats in the House of Representatives, meaning it's very hard for either party to win and hold it, which means you got to be on your toes all the time, and that means a lot more work for me. But I think that's better than these seats where everybody's safe. We have too much dead wood in Congress. We got too many people sitting around feeling comfortable. I wish everybody had to you know, produce results, you know, to come back to their districts and say, like I can, look, we've helped 3,000 families. We've returned $5 million to those families who were getting jerked around by the federal government. 800 of those are military families who needed help or deserved help and weren't getting it. And we've passed 17 pieces of legislation into law in my first 3 years. That's pretty good for a sophomore in the minority party. But I have to show those results to the people who sent me here, or my contract's not getting renewed. And I think that's healthy in our democracy. It means more work for me, and some of that's the political side and the fundraising, and that can weigh down on your spirits. But I love helping the people I represent. I consider it a huge honor to be the representative for this district, and I am very proud to be down here fighting every day to get good stuff done.
One of the things, Sean Patrick Maloney, that you've been interested in, and I think it takes a lot of guts, and I want to congratulate you, because it's not always the most popular thing to be doing, but you've taken a real leadership role in the indigent defense crisis. In other words, defending indigents who don't have the money that, you know, a state legislative leader might have, you know, to defend themselves. That takes guts. Good for you.
Well, hey, thanks for bringing that up. Well, listen, people should know, you know, we have a Sixth Amendment right to counsel. It's an explicit right in the Constitution. I love my friends who are always banging everybody over the head with the Constitution. I wonder where they read it sometimes. And the fact of the matter is the Supreme Court told us 53 years ago in Gideon v. Wainwright that means that if you can't afford a lawyer, you know, the state's got to provide one. And what has happened in so many counties, even in New York State, but particularly in other more conservative areas of the country, is they have eviscerated that right to counsel because people don't want to pay for it. And that means huge caseloads for public defenders. It means unbelievably unfair games they play on saying if you make $12,000 a year, you can afford your own lawyer, stuff like that, where people are clearly well below the poverty line. Look, here's the point. If we're gonna have all these laws that criminalize everything and that send people to jail for long periods of time, then my goodness, you got to give them a right to counsel. And if we're sending too many people to prison, and I believe we've gone way overboard on this mass incarceration stuff and criminalizing nonviolent drug offenses and other things, then we have to take responsibility for the costs that go along with that. I think what's exciting about what's happening in Washington is that we can have better diversion programs. You know, I've got a bill that would allow cops the discretion to take drug addicts directly to treatment. It saves taxpayer money. It keeps it out of the criminal justice system. You're going to save lives. You're going to prevent a lot of other street-level crime that happens because people are feeding a drug addiction. They do this in Gloucester and Albany now and in Seattle with very good results. So that's diversion. We also have to do more in prison so that people don't come back. That means we've got to have education of prisoners, and we've got to allow people to take accountability for their own lives. So like the Barred Prison Initiative does a great job of allowing prisoners to take responsibility and earn degrees and then be employable when they come out of prison. And we have to do a better job with giving people, you know, effective assistance of counsel. It's a constitutional right. We should not be in a system where 95% of people plead, where we just churn these people through the criminal justice system. We're all paying for it. We got 2.5 million people in jail in this country. We can do a lot better, and we can save money for the taxpayers, and we can really fight the violent criminals and be smarter about crime, and we can honor our Constitution. And so I'm glad you brought it up. I'm very proud about it. We're working closely with the NAACP and with the ACLU and other groups that are really concerned about the scandal of indigent defense and how it's just been denied to people who are very vulnerable. And even if they're wrongdoers, it doesn't mean our system doesn't. Talk to prosecutors. You know, prosecutors want to have good lawyers on the other side. It works better when people have somebody who is able to, you know, to engage in that adversarial process. And so, so that's one of the things I'm working on down here in the last few months that we're very excited about.
And let me just again congratulate you on, because I think people can do what's necessarily popular, but This takes some real strength of character on your part, and I appreciate it very much. Thanks so much, Sean Patrick Maloney, for being our guest here. That's Sean Patrick Maloney, Democrat of New York's 18th District, and he's been around in office since 2013. Again, Sean, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alan. It's always a pleasure.